with my good colleague Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, an Australian national, part of the Commonwealth, and therefore King Charles III is Gregory's king. I watch this and learn. Right now, the king is to be celebrated. This is a man undergoing from the revelation today that was matter of fact. He visited a cancer ward and spoke to some of the patients who are undergoing chemotherapy. And the king acknowledged his chemotherapy was getting along fine, but he was going to have another treatment that afternoon. We still cannot characterize the king's cancer other than to say that he's being extremely bold and brave about it and returning to his duties. Gregory, the kingship is a special place in human history. And the king is living up to his forebears and to the role of his family. But Gregory, having been through some aspects of what the king's going through, this is extremely exhausting. He's going to be tired all the time. He's a brave man.
Yes, there's no question about it. The treatment of cancers is what saps the energy of the sufferer, as you and I both know. The king, as you say, has been extremely courageous and disciplined about how he's approached this. He has kept up with his work at home, if you like, the dispatch box dealings with legislation, briefing the prime minister and vice versa. These have all been, on his plate all this time. So he hasn't actually stopped working, but he has stopped his visible roles out in the outside world. Those roles he is starting to resume this week. And that takes a lot of courage and effort in itself. And it was very important that his first public act was to go to a cancer ward in a London hospital. And that was very, very encouraging and uplifting, not only to the cancer sufferers who he met with and shared with. It was uplifting, I think, to the king himself, because it would have given him courage that his own, the fellow sufferers were themselves being extremely stoic. And typical was when one of the patients asked the king how he was, he said, "Very well." And this is very much in the keeping of the British character. When you ask someone, "How are you?" the answer has got to be, "Very well, thank you. How are you?" Unlike the United States, where the question, "How are you?" invites the response of a litany of healthcare problems, because people in much of the world regard the question, "How are you?" as a question instead of a greeting. But the king really took the uplifting response. Now, he is determined and is now confirmed to be going ahead with the Trooping of the Colour in June, and it's still possible that he will do that on horseback. The doctors obviously are going to try to err on the side of caution, but I think we may well see him on horseback.
With you, Gregory. That presentation today tells me this is important to him, because he doesn't know what the future brings. He wants to do it now.
Exactly. Yes, very encouraging.
We're speaking of King Charles III. His family, however, is part of the news always. And in this instance, this is a surprise to me. It's called Market Garden. It was General Montgomery's idea, presented to General Eisenhower in early September 1944. The situation at the time was Paris had fallen. The Battle of Normandy was over. The Allied forces were arranging themselves to drive on Germany. Montgomery, sitting with Eisenhower, presented Market Garden. Market was the three parachute divisions, plus the Poles had a battalion or a regiment that was going to parachute. They were going to jump ahead on a line from the Allied lines to Arnhem, crossing the Rhine. Each parachute division was responsible for opening the bridges in their sector, because 30 Corps, led by the British Army, was going to drive up a very narrow road to Arnhem, get across the Rhine, and, as the famous saying goes, the war would be over by Christmas. It failed. A bridge too far is the way we talk about it. However, having read about Market Garden for years, having seen again and again the blame shifted from first paras who were trapped at Arnhem to the inadequate preparation by Montgomery. There are not enough aircraft. We now have a new story that Market Garden was betrayed. Anthony Blunt, a member of the Cambridge Five, betrayed it. How is that? He was a spy for Stalin. That was the Cambridge Five, Philby and Burgess and the lot. Well, it turns out, according to the London Times, and I asked Gregory to comment on the proportion of this, Stalin saw that if Arnhem falls into the hands of the 1st Paras and 30 Corps, they'll be in Berlin before me, and I will not be able to reap the benefits of taking all of Eastern Europe from my empire. So therefore, he ordered Anthony Blunt, the head of MI5 spy catching at that moment, to betray Market Garden to the Germans. Gregory, do you believe it?
Yes, I do. And not only that, I'm not sure that that Stalin ordered Sir Anthony Blunt to divulge this information to the Germans, or whether the Soviets themselves or Philby Blunt et al. Got it through to their conduits in Switzerland, which had access to the Germans. But one way or another, it was Blunt who got this intelligence to the German high command, which is why, they were prepared for the big assault at Arnhem and provided a devastating response to the Paras. The reality that the blame was being made by mostly Americans against Field Marshal Montgomery for the failure of Market Garden is typical of the competition which existed dramatically between Patton and Field Marshal Montgomery, because they both wanted to be the first to get to reach Berlin. And so we've lived with this myth, which has been supported by American propaganda for decades, that it was Montgomery's failure, and it really wasn't. I mean, how many resources did they get to support the Paras going in and 30 Corps going into Arnhem? They put in everything they could, and that may not have been enough, but it was worth the gamble and would have succeeded had the two panzer divisions not been deployed there. They were also, confounded a little bit by the weather, which was one of the fortunes of war. But basically, this was a brilliant campaign,
right,
brilliantly and courageously executed by the Americans and the British and Poles.
And what we couldn't see for decades was, how is it that the 9th and 10th SS panzer divisions just happened to be at Arnhem? You couldn't see it. You thought, well, it's the luck of the draw. It's the fog of war. Now, the second part, this is the puzzle. Anthony Blunt is exposed as part of the Cambridge Five, and yet he's kept on in royal circles as, what did you tell me, Gregory, the keeper of the Queen's pictures? Because the rationalization was he'd betrayed the United Kingdom to an ally, the Russians. It never occurred to them to look and to the American discernment, and also Enigma, who was Josephine. He was Josephine, and Josephine betrayed, the allegation is, Josephine betrayed the Market Garden to the Soviets. As Gregory says, it could have been the Soviet leak, it could have been any leak out of Switzerland. But in any event, they knew he was a spy, and they kept him on.
Not really.
All right.
Not really. Basically, they stripped him of his title, Sir, his knighthood, and he was dismissed as Keeper of the Queen's Pictures. But he did not face prosecution because this was well after the defection of Kim Philby and the defection of some of the others like Burgess and Maclean and the like. They wanted it all to go away. They didn't think that Blunt was as important to the Soviet cause as was Kim Philby. In fact, he was right up there with Philby. Philby was definitely the coordinator and premier Soviet asset.
I'm flabbergasted, Gregory, about the castigation against Montgomery all these decades. Flabbergasted.
Yes.
And we need the same historians who've worked that territory to revise it, given this story, if it holds up. It's awfully attractive right now, but I want to read much more. Gregory Copley is my guide on Commonwealth matters, and this is a Commonwealth matter. You betcha. 30 Corps was betrayed. all those casualties in 30 Corps. First Para was betrayed, and I imagine there are a lot of children of First Para who want to know the truth about Anthony Blunt. Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. Forgive the sidebar, but Anthony Blunt, for heaven's sakes. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.